rabbi, your minister, your moms, your dads, your teachers, because drugs can kill. And if you do drugs, you go to hell before you die. Please.
There better be a lot of Captain Lou Albano fans out there, because otherwise this is just going to go right over the head.
Captain Albano was defined a generation, Katie.
Okay, what was that you do?
I would have thought it was mine, but it wasn't.
Katie, you're so square.
I know.
If you do drugs, you go to hell before you die?
That's the best part of them. That's why I take them.
Exactly.
Well, it's one of the reasons.
Just say no, okay?
Well, I guess we should introduce ourselves, because it's a new show and a new hour. This is the main course.
Part Q.
A slight alteration cheeky. Of the name change. Yeah, a cheeky little.
Jack, we have to change it on the site. Sorry.
Yeah, I think he did it. He did it already.
He changed it to part
Jack
two.
Jack is so on top of it.
He did it to part two. We're changing it to part Q.
No, he had. I thought he had part Q. Okay, never mind. Anyway, we are today in the studio. We have Shauna Pacifico sitting in with us.
Hello.
And her cousin.
And her
from
lovely
Brazil.
Cousin
Rafaela Angerossi.
Tudo bem? Fala em português aqui.
Oi.
Oh, nice. Oh, isn't
sexy.
That cute? Yeah.
Reminds me of the girl from Ipanema.
We're going to cut you off now.
Sorry.
We have Mike Edison as our guest today, which is always a pleasure. Mike's one of our very favorite guests.
Yeah, someone's getting hurt today, though.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I'm slapping the figure 4 leg lock on Patrick.
Yeah, I'm doing this. I'm ready for it.
I will pay you money.
Yeah. We're doing it. Should we start it right now?
Pay me money. What, do you think I'm a whore? No, I'm a slut. I do it because I'm into it.
Yeah. We're absolutely going to do that.
And someone's going to get hurt.
Yippee-yay, okay.
So we should say the reason that we are having this wrestling theme is Captain Lou Albano sadly passed away.
Of natural causes.
Of natural causes.
And that surprises you, Katie, that a wrestler dies of natural causes? This is not a work. I think he actually did die. it's not shtick. It's not.
No, he did. He did die. Yeah. He's definitely taking the long dirt nap, but he's. It does surprise me that he's
76. You know,
76 is not old nowadays.
Yeah. Is it true that Captain Lou took 15 different tag teams and 4 single competitors to championship gold?
Well, of course it is. He was a manager of champions, and I think Captain Lou's great skill was with the tag teams. You know, and, you know, I don't think you see great tag teams anymore like you did. I think. The Moondogs were amongst my favorites. Rex and Spot. You remember them, Katie, right? The Moondogs.
You betcha, honey.
They had a bone.
I actually knew a dog named Moondog.
There were these hillbillies that got his bone around to hit people over the head with. Moondogs, Rex and Spot. But I think his greatest tag team is probably the Wild Samoans.
Oh, okay.
Beauty.
Yeah, the Wild Samoans.
What was their gig?
Their gig? They're Samoans. What more do you need to know?
Did people get hurt?
People always get hurt.
Yeah.
Now, Captain Lou was a great guy, you know.
Now, did you meet Captain Lou in your times of...
I bumped into him a couple times. I can't say we're pals or anything like that. I think Captain Lou was most famous in the mainstream, you know, for working with Cyndi Lauper in the 80s.
Right.
And the epic of the first WrestleMania.
That is the only reason
Guys,
why anybody
go
would have
to
heard
a,
about
Do we have any video of that? Or?
Well, I'll tell you what, though, Patrick. When he turned good guy to work with Cyndi Lauper, Richard Meltzer described it as the most glaring example of Reagan-era culture death. You know, Captain Lewis shouldn't be a good guy. You know, he's always a bad guy. And he went to the other side, the dark side.
He was a domineering father in Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
That's right.
He was being negative.
I don't remember that.
He was... you don't remember?
I mean, I've seen the video, but I don't remember.
I don't remember even seeing the video, and I'm much more the right age for that. You would have been a kid. How old were you?
I know, but
you
I had a sister.
Born in 1979.
79, but my sister is 8 years older than me, and so we shared a room. So I was.
So, Pat, we've got the Goonies Are Good Enough song queued up here.
Let's play a little bit of that.
And this is the ridiculous video where Iron Sheik is there and all these other crazy wrestlers.
God, the Iron Sheik at MTV, that really broke my heart.
Really?
Yeah, you know, I don't like seeing like the bad guys coming over to the side of these do-gooders and flag wavers. It's no good.
Well, we should talk.
I like my bad guy wrestlers to be bad.
Well, tell us about the WWF Women's Championship. I mean, that was how Cyndi Lauper came to it and brought MTV to wrestling.
Sure,
right?
You know, that was the days that was really the lunchbox and action figure crowd. That's when wrestling was really being pitched towards kids a lot, and Saturday morning cartoons, and the violence was being taken out of it. It was a bad time. A bad time for wrestling. And if you recall, it was in Piper's Pit. Roddy Piper was one of the protagonists.
He had his own talk. Piper's Pit was a talk show, right?
That's right. And I think the main event at WrestleMania, I was there at the first WrestleMania. It was fantastic. Liberace was the guest timekeeper for the main event.
Did you just make that?
No, it was fantastic. He kept time on a diamond-studded piano-shaped watch that Elvis Presley gave him.
No way.
And Muhammad Ali was the guest referee.
This is culture. This is
Muhammad
history.
Ali, yeah.
This is historic.
Yeah, get up, Katie.
Absolutely.
I'm into it.
How'd you not know?
Now you got my interest.
Now you get Liberace and you're into it. I love Liberace.
You do. Liberace was great.
He's converted millions of fans to worldwide wrestling. But we should say, it's funny you mentioned Muhammad Ali. Guys, I'm sorry to go to another quote, audio, but could you go to one of those ones where Lou is just like promoting, like the one where he promotes Greg the Hammer Valentine or something like
now
that?
There's a man who knew how to break a leg and relish it.
None other than the giant John Studd and King Kong Bundy.
Well, let me tell you, killer, it's going to be a busy night. Number one, I got my Bulldogs for a title match. And then number two, I've got my giant machine and I've got my super machine. And I seem to be upsetting people out there. All the people in the world seem to enjoy this new combined effort of 816 pounds. But yet Bobby Heenan seems to come out here and he seems to get upset. And I saw him quivering. Yes. I saw him shaking. He said he knows who the giant machine is. Well, I said, Bobby Heenan, if you know who the giant machine is, then be man enough to get up there and take the mask off him. If you know who the super machine is, take the mask right off. Now, we know you have also a combined effort here, a combined weight of well over 800 pounds with Bundy and Studd. Studd is the man who claims he cannot be slammed. Well, I'm going to assure you, John Studd and Bundy, that the giant machine will slam you, will humiliate you, and will humble you. And Bobby Heenan, you're going to stop putting your hand up there, cameraman. You're going to have a lot to yell and holler about. You're going to be quivering and quivering, baby, like you got St. Vitus dance, because you're going to be shaking. Because the giant
Machine
is here today, and he'll be
here
to stay, and will be here
for
many
a day. And
so will the super
machine. Fantastic.
You know, Lou Albano always said, just push the button and he could rap. He could just turn it on. It was like water coming out of a faucet. The man definitely had the gift.
Brandon and I were back there looking at all these videos for it. And I mean, even as an old guy, like he would just be sitting there, and then the second he would get the mic, man, he was off.
Well,
he was
that's why it's called professional wrestling.
Yeah. Right, right.
You know, I've been in rooms with these guys, and it's just amazing when the camera goes on, the red light goes on. You know, they're credit to their profession, a credit to any profession. I've learned so much watching these guys, and just in terms of, you know, being able to talk the talk and walk the walk, and
yeah,
you know,
sort of no matter what. Yeah, put on the light, and I'm ready to roll.
That's right.
Let me ask you about the masks. What's the story with the masks?
Well, you know, he was talking in that last promo piece about the giant machine, which was
and if you
Andre
know who he
giant.
Is, take off the mask.
Well, it was Andre the Giant, and it's obviously Andre the Giant, but he has a mask on, so now we don't know who he is. Yeah. You know, it's like Clark Kent and Superman in the glasses. It's like, wow, you put that mask on, who is that? And that's why I love wrestling so much. People say, is it real or is it fake? I'm saying, if you got to ask that, you just missed the whole point.
But also,
because
it's like
a guy, Andre the Giant, he's 8 feet tall. No one else in the world. He speaks with this retarded French accent. He weighs 900 pounds, and he puts a mask on, and now you don't recognize him. But that's it, and you got to buy into that, you know?
Yeah.
It's called kayfabe, right?
Kayfabe. Kayfabe is an old Carney term, and it means you never act out of character. That's it. Kayfabe means, you know, when Sergeant Slaughter is Sergeant Slaughter, he is Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah.
I mean, it was real embarrassing when the Iron Sheik got caught smoking dope with Jim Duggan, the Hacksaw Jim Duggan, was a redneck, you know. And so they got the Iranian and like the redneck smoking dope together. They got busted, like, outside of Howard Johnson's New Jersey Turnpike or something. It's like, not only aren't they supposed to be in a car together, they're not supposed to be, like, smoking pot together. They hate each other. They just got finished hitting each other over the head with 2x4s and flags.
So kayfabe is the wrestling equivalent of the Sicilian mafia's omerta?
Well, yeah. You never act out of character. You know, you never break kayfabe.
Yeah, omerta was silence, I thought.
Well, it was, taking the fifth in America.
So speaking of the real or fake thing, we got Lou Albano on Fox News, hilariously enough, toward the end of his career, talking about the fact that he thinks wrestling is real.
Well, so it's your position then that wrestling is not fixed?
No, they're great, great athletes of the great sport.
Not fixed.
Not fixed.
All right. Are you willing to go to a polygraph and answer that question?
I am willing to go to a polygraph. I'm willing to put my reputation on the line as Captain Lou Albano that wrestling is not a fixed sport. They're the finest athletes in the world. I've never thrown a match. I know wrestling is real. I know it's right where it is. It's the greatest thing in the world. I'm right there. Polygraph. If the machine, the machine would have to be a liar to catch me off guard because I know I'm not a liar.
And that's what he's talking about. The man doesn't break that.
Where does he get the name Captain from?
And he questions the technology of the machine.
He's a real captain. I'm sure of it.
Where did he get Captain from?
What? No idea. Captain of the wrestling ship?
Captain Underpants.
Katie, I
didn't
some respect.
Mean that. No, really, actually, I do respect.
I mean, this is the man who brought 15 tag teams to the gold. You know, 15 championships.
There's no question he is.
You
great
try to manage the Moondogs and the Wild Samoans. You think these Wild Samoans are easy to manage?
You didn't bring the bone.
I have infinite. I really do. But I really liked the style of the beard too.
The
Rex
and
really
Spot,
excellent.
The Moondogs. I loved the Moondogs.
Well, Dr. Louis Vincent Albano was a native of Rome. He grew up in Mount Vernon. And
that's Rome, New York, Patrick, right?
That's Rome. Oh.
Rome,
native of Rome. Oh, Rome, New York. That would have been so cool. I was hoping Italy. But
I thought
he
it
wrestled.
Was Italy, too.
Okay, yeah. He wrestled at Stepanak High School.
Let me tell you, brother, he wouldn't have been a captain. He would have been an emperor.
Awesome. Your voice kind of sounds like him. I have a feeling you can do a good impersonation.
I have the feeling that you studied right at Captain's Theater.
Are you kidding? Every
nice
Saturday
pattern.
Morning.
Yeah.
Back in the day, I mean, there was the great triumvirate of wrestling managers. Captain Lou, Fred Blassie, the King of Men, the Hollywood Fashion Plate, Fred Blassie, and the Grand Wizard of Professional Wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It was like this old Jew who wore a turban and wraparound shades.
Stop
and claimed
it.
To be the smartest man of all time.
He's making this up.
It's brilliant.
See? You're starting to say, what have I been missing, right?
Totally.
So now,
Rowdy,
I've been
still drinking
in the dark.
Your Kool-Aid.
I mean, there have been other great managers. Bobby Heenan that Lou was talking about came a little later. He was a wrestler, and Bobby the Brain Heenan, he was great. There was Skandor Akbar at the time. Eddie Kreischman, another old Jew, just whined and complained.
Who was Hammer Valentine?
Greg the Hammer Valentine. He was a breaker of legs.
All right, let's
do it. Are they really
are we talking about the mafia? Uh-oh, here they go.
Wait,
I'm in the middle. Sit down.
I told you someone was getting hurt today.
My wine is there.
All right, I'm putting Patrick, so I'm going to slap the figure four leg lock on Patrick.
What are you doing?
The play-by-play. He's going to do it for me.
Okay. Okay, Patrick's gotten out of his chair.
Patrick's put his hands in his pocket.
He's pulling his pants up.
To clarify here.
Mike is up. Mike is up. He's moving towards Patrick at the end of the shipping container. He's stepping over Rafaela's legs. They're getting into the corner here. Patrick's getting down on the floor. Okay, Mike is moving in. He's moving in here.
Oh shit!
Stop it, Mike.
Wait, are you guys about to fornicate?
This is getting out of hand, boys. Oh my god!
Wait a minute. This is X-rated.
He's got Patrick's legs in a hammerlock. He's got him in a fist, in a neck. That's not going to be anything of him. Leave him alone.
I'm blind now.
Oh, my God. And he's hurt.
Now tell me wrestling is fake.
That's right. Patrick is whimpering in the corner.
Oh Mike, I can't believe I said it was just an act. You took it too far. You caused real pain.
That's right, brother.
Should we summon help, Patrick? You look like you're right.
I want to go on to Piper's Pit and talk about this injustice. I want to talk about this injustice on Piper's Pit.
Greg the Hammer Valentine, amongst his many other accomplishments, probably holds some sort of record for the best T-shirt ever worn. After he did that to Chief Wahoo McDaniel, he came on TV the next week with a T-shirt that said, "I broke Wahoo's leg." I was very impressed with that as a child.
I'm impressed with these names.
Yeah, you know, it's poetry, right?
It's right out of Damon Runyon.
It's poetry. Greg the Hammer Valentine.
It is so great.
Leg lock.
So Piper had his... How did his talk show differ from
yours?
McMahon's? From McMahon. Didn't McMahon have his own talk show?
Well, Vince McMahon, I mean, the guiding light behind all of this. And I mean, I consider one of the great creative entertainment minds of all time and certainly, the last part of the last century. He understood the implications of wrestling and all this, like, wackiness and kookiness. And had a show called Tuesday Night Titans. TNT, Tuesday Night Titans, and it was wrestlers on like a Johnny Carson style talk show.
No way.
So you'd have Greg the Hammer Valentine, like, you know, making an omelet, or some guy clog dancing, or talking about their hobbies. It was absolutely, absolutely bizarre.
That's totally surreal.
And that's the great thing about wrestling. It just sort of lives in its own world. Wrestling doesn't care about you. You know, it just doesn't. Either get on that train or get run over.
or what about Piper's Pit? What was his, who, what type of fan liked Rowdy Roddy Piper?
Well, you know, Piper, I think, was the first, well, now they call him like tweeners because he was a bad guy, right? Do you remember Roddy Piper?
No.
You guys live in America?
I know,
with a TV?
I know Hulk Hogan.
You had a TV?
Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan.
I hate Hulk Hogan. I'm not done with Hogan. You know, I feel bad for him because his life's gone south. You know, his wife left him and his kids in jail.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the way I wanted it to happen. You know, I wanted to finish it myself.
His wife is like dating a 17-year-old.
See, that, you know.
Well, it's all over MTV.
Wow.
MTV. Hulk Hogan started MTV, or at least he tell you that. Lou Albano and Hulk Hogan.
Started.
I don't want my MTV. That was a bad
thing. What other like famous wrestling stars became as big as Hulk Hogan?
Well, Hulk Hogan's by far the biggest, but he can't wrestle. I mean, he's borderline retarded. I mean, anybody will tell you that. He can't wrestle. He's you know, he's
so a, he doesn't have the technique of a wrestler like Captain Lou studied wrestling. He was a wrestler.
Well, the men that worked under Captain Lou were, you know, they were rule breakers. He was a bad guy. I mean, you understand that manager in wrestling basically serves one purpose: to interfere in matches and cheat.
to get the chair out on the ref.
Cheat. To cheat. Good guys don't have managers.
They chair while the ref's not looking. I mean, the refs were great. You know, they were a big part
someday
of it.
We could have a whole show all about referees.
Did ever refs back then throw matches like they're accused of being thrown twice?
How do you throw a match when you already know who's going to win before you start?
I'll say one thing.
It's decided, right? It's
this
decided before it starts.
So
wait a second.
Surreal.
I have the answer
and that's
to that.
It. And again, wrestling doesn't care. Wrestling is the least self-conscious of all art forms.
Don't some people die?
Awesome.
From accidents.
The
like, wasn't there
the
that guy that fell?
You know when
that was an
he
accident.
He could go one.
No, you're talking about
two, and then he's supposed to hold it, and he always
holds
it. And then
you're
the
talking about Owen Hart, Bret Hart's brother, Owen Hart, who fell from. They were doing a stunt, an entrance on a wire. That's a horrible, horrible thing. I mean, that's a real accident. That's not dying in the ring per se. I mean, that was you know, someone
is that
was
the only accident, or is it
I mean, there are a lot of dead wrestlers, believe me. A lot of dead wrestlers. Ox Baker claims to have killed 4 men in the ring with his heart punch, but that was in Mexico, so it can't
do
be
they
verified.
Die right at the is it like when they when they plunge the needle into the heart of Uma Thurman in Pulp Fiction,
the
like
heart
that
punch.
Kind of moment? Yeah,
that's exactly what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. One good blow to the sternum.
Who is Ivan Koloff?
Ivan Koloff, well, he was the Russian bear. He was, you know, back in the day, I know.
You are just filled with knowledge.
Amazing.
I know.
I love a guy who really knows his stuff. This is great.
I'm so unprepared for today, too. I came out here, I didn't do my homework. What are we going to talk about? I think Albano managed Ivan Koloff to the world championship, right? That was the day, you remember, when the bad guys were Russians because it was the Cold War.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
You know, it was after the period when there were German bad guys after mm-hmm. the real war. Mm-hmm. And then Russians became the bad guys and eventually, you know, Iranians.
And yeah, we're
not allowed to say anything.
Once McMahon lost power with the American conscience, we went to Iran.
The Iron Sheik, you know, he was one of the greatest heels of all time, of course.
He was great. He was in this video with Cyndi Lauper and...
The Iron Sheik?
Yeah.
I almost got the shit beaten out of me for rooting for the Iron Sheik at Madison Square Garden.
Really? Who was he fighting?
You know, some flag-waving patriotic idiot.
Oh, I see. So everybody was on that side. They weren't dwelling on the side of pure wrestling.
Well, there's been a great tradition of Arabs and oil sheiks in wrestling. Before the Iron Sheik, there was the real Sheik, the original Sheik from Detroit. We were talking about him. He was the guy that knew how to throw fire.
Remember, he could
metabolize a fireball.
What?
And you still want to know whether it's real or fake, Katie? He can metabolize a fireball.
Out of the palm of his hand.
Allah delivered it to him. Boy, they hated him.
You know,
his idea of wrestling was sticking a fork in someone's neck.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, Shauna, you know, comes from a kind of a culture that was involved with the carnival.
No, well, I'm a carny.
You're a carny?
Really? Plain and simple.
Tell us.
Grew up, my family's business is selling food in fairs and state fairs, local fairs, 4-H fairs, from the Midwest to the East, all the way down to Florida, all this part of the country.
Well, what kind of food?
Not funnel cakes. Elephant ears, funnel cakes, fried vegetables, yeah. Bloomin' onion, corn dogs, steak sandwiches.
Oh, man.
Gyros.
Where are they now?
They're all working.
Yeah?
Working their asses off, yeah.
You never saw any wrestling at the county fair?
I've seen a lot of wrestling, tractor pulls, motorcycle, dirt bike races, lots of country music.
Livestock competitions?
Lots of livestock competition. It's funny how...
You're not comparing wrestling to a livestock competition, are you?
No.
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 No. Livestock competitions aren't fixed.
And hence, fixed? Not as exciting.
Yeah.
You see,
exactly.
See, the thing about knowing the outcome ahead of time, or at least the people who plan it, is there should be no anticlimax. Everything should be exciting.
Well, you know, somehow I think even athletes in the NBA and Major League Baseball even kind of follow the ethic of drama. Like, they don't play quite as hard. They don't close out a team like they should, so it ends up coming down to this ninth inning drama or fourth quarter.
You can't
heroics.
Be serious. Are you saying baseball's fixed? Is that what you're saying?
No,
here? Right here on the Heritage Radio Network.
No,
baseball is fixed.
No, they've been getting
the Yankees are fixed.
They've gotten better at getting those dramatic moments. You know what I mean? I think they kind of gear it. I mean, they
I think
gear
that's
themselves.
Just television. I
the
think that's just trying
themselves.
To. I think that's just people trying to sell more airtime or whatever.
Well, no one wants to see a blowout Super Bowl. We love those, you know, cliffhanger games.
Yeah.
Well, let's say the
Lakers. You're not actually saying that the NFL is fixed.
No, no. I say, like, let's say the Lakers are clobbering another team. They won't keep giving it to Kobe. You're up by 14. You're up by 15. They'll let the other team come to 8. Then Kobe comes back in.
Right.
He gets his plays called. There is a kind of equalizing strategy, because if they really wanted to win, like the Patriots did that year, where they were trying to crush every team and kick field goals from 40 yards, even though they had already won the game. Like, I think there's a kind of equalizing.
I don't know, Patrick. This is like a crazy
incredibly
conspiracy.
Incredibly subversive, man.
It really. You know, I mean, winning is good for the box office.
Conspiracy theories.
Winning is good for business.
Edison, I have a question for you.
Ask away.
What do you think of the last gasp of sort of recent WWF, like Stone Cold Steve Austin and his friends and so forth?
Well, Stone Cold, you know... That was one of the great last great feuds was Stone Cold and Vince McMahon. I mean, that was part of Vince's genius, that whole feud, is because Stone Cold was beating up his boss. And who can't relate to that? You know? I mean, you know, Vince is like the suit. He's coming in, and he had a feud with a wrestler, and he's getting the shit kicked out of him. I mean, and that's, you know, and if you recall, that's when wrestling had, like, you know, its second wave. Wrestling goes in waves.
You're going to take down Hoffman.
How many of your employees want to take you down?
No one.
It's an everyman thing. I think it's still good. You know, I tune into the WWE occasionally. And it's good. It's like anything else. It's a 2-hour show, and maybe there's 30 minutes of it that I'm actually interested in. I have to wade through a bunch of muck. But the fans are there, and it's great. You know, it's better when wrestling isn't in the mainstream, because then I don't have to talk to people who don't understand wrestling.
Count us as mainstream, right?
Patrick, you're a major fan. No, you're for real, because you do love it. You have the passion. Katie's outside looking in.
No, Katie's amazed. This is the first time.
I'm thinking I want to tune into this.
Let's cut
poetry.
Let's cut to another.
We're the poetry.
Yeah. Hey, Jack or Nat, do we have another
neckbreaker?
Oh,
atomic spine buster.
Different rap from Albano.
Corkscrew leg breaker?
There's corkscrew neck breaker. No, it's poetry.
Corkscrew neck breaker.
So we got the Super Mario rap from...
Oh, that rap?
Yeah, we made a lot of bucks with Super Mario Bros.
Do the Mario swing!
Yeah. I get to watch this on the computer.
No, I don't want to hear this one, guys. I want to hear another one of his ones where he's promoting, like... I want to hear one where he's...
Well, you know what? On your Google machine in there, find the Piper's Pit.
Oh.
The Piper's Pit, where Lou went back to being a bad guy after this whole
Cyndi Lauper episode.
Oh, God. It was really just so heartbreaking.
What
to
percentage
see him work
of
as
his
guy.
Career was as a good
well,
guy?
Like,
he
like
wanted
1%.
To make some money.
Like that moment. Well, look, there's nothing in wrestling that's more important than making money. That's what it's all about.
Okay, yeah, here it comes. Here it comes.
This is.
Tell him, Cyndi.
Hello, peasants.
This is Roddy Piper. This is Piper's Pit.
Show
and this is Lou going back to his roots as a bad
what
guy.
What a wonderful human being I really am. I want the captain.
They should have given the Nobel Prize to Piper.
To see you.
So much more deserving than that Obama fellow.
I have asked you to come out here because truly you are now manager of again World's Heavyweight Tag Team Champions Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo, which makes it 16 times.
Oh, they were good guys. This is the end of it.
This is my 15th championship, and I'm proud of it, perhaps the greatest of all time.
I'd just like to say that in having you here. My honest opinion of you managing him is I truly believe that you are one of the biggest pigs that I have ever seen in my entire life. No, wait a second.
Still working as a good
wait,
guy.
No, wait. You tell me you're talking about being born in the USA with this.
That's right.
With these boys, you have these silly little things on.
This was a low moment.
Don't you ever put your hands on me, Pipey.
Wait. Even if I wanted to put my hands on you.
I'm not putting these belts right around your head. Maybe that's what I'd be able to do. Oh, you know that?
It's like rap. That's why I brought it up.
I was gonna say, go back to the beginning. Where did this start? Where did this like craziness? Because the fans of wrestling are as into it as they're into it.
They're fans.
They're fans, they're fanatics, and it's very, I would say, secular. It's not like football where. Kind of everybody can watch it.
As these guys have heard me say before, it's like what Dostoevsky says about faith. if you get it, no explanation is necessary, and if you don't, no explanation will do.
Will suffice, yeah.
And that's it. Wrestling's always been a crowd splitter. I told you, my father was more upset when I was working for wrestling magazines than when I was working for Hustler. That was more acceptable. Hustler.
How could you hurt
our
family?
Wrestling. It was like, oh, my son. It's got a bad reputation.
It does.
An undeserved bad reputation.
But it's funny.
But you've been tuning into it since you were a little kid. So.
Well, yeah.
And back when I was a kid, it was the one bit of pure carnival on television. There weren't that many stations. You didn't have 50 choices.
We had three. Six and 12.
There wasn't even a...
10, 12, and 6.
There wasn't even a 1 on the most dials.
Yeah, right.
It just went 2 to 13.
Yeah.
That was it.
I remember this.
And wrestling, it's... Monday Night Raw, they always say it's the longest running TV show of all time. It's run much longer than Mary Tyler Moore or MASH. All of them put together.
Wow.
And it's 4 hours of original programming every week. It has no season.
What did it lose, though?
And it's been running, this...
No, there's no season.
Forever and ever. Wrestling was made for television and vice versa.
Right.
But what has happened to it? Where is that lost? Because it used to dominate the kind of public sphere more, or no?
Wrestling, it's always going to be popular. There's always going to be wrestling fans. And it pops up into the mainstream, the pop culture radar. Every 10 years, it sort of happens. It's with the MTV thing and Cyndi Lauper. Mm-hmm. In the 90s with Stone Cold Steve Austin, when they were really making it big again, they were on the cover of Rolling Stone and Time. Et cetera, et cetera. And it'll happen again another 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's always there. It doesn't go away. But the thing is, they don't need you. They need wrestling fans.
Right.
And that's what they're filling arenas with.
Who are the executioners?
The executioners were a couple of thugs in black masks, exactly like they sound. There's a couple of thugs, with brass knuckles in their shorts.
Cool.
And they won. The Moondogs had the bone.
I love the Moondogs.
What about the Valiant brothers?
Jimmy Valiant. Luscious Jimmy Valiant, who later became a great manager,
Luscious.
Too. Luscious Jimmy Valiant. Luscious Johnny Valiant.
Yeah.
By the way,
what skill sets did a manager need?
Corruption.
Well,
venalism.
All these things. Well, when Albano, we didn't get that clip when he turned bad guy again. He was busted on Cyndi Lauper after he'd been in the videos and tell him, Cyndi, tell him that all women are slime. Sexism, that's called cheap heat, but man, you say something like that and everybody hates you. That's what a manager needs to do. Get people to hate him.
Yeah.
It's called getting heat. You got the more people respond, the better you're doing.
Getting
well, look attention. At Don King. He's brought boxing down to its knees.
A legitimate sport.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
And what about in Brazil? Tell us a little bit about wrestling's importance in Latin culture.
Well, as far as wrestling,
Yeah, wrestling or, you know, wrestling.
Well, I only know jiu-jitsu.
Oh, so you're into this more hardcore cage fighting, right?
She also did capoeira.
Oh, yeah, and there's capoeira, but that's a whole
Can you do capoeira with Mike Edison?
I will also pay money to see that.
Okay,
Mike Edison would pay money to see that.
I don't know, I would have to take my cowboy boots off right now.
Let's do it, in the area. No, he can take it. He was a wrestler. That's how he got the editorship.
It would look more like I'm dancing.
Well, let's do it. Will you do it for us?
Yeah, right outside.
Yeah, in the rain. Get out there now.
I could do another play-by-play.
Heritage Radio clearly needs a champion.
Yeah,
you
really
have to have a tournament to be the champion.
This is going way off course.
Let's do it. I'll do a capoeira with you out there.
You're politically correct radio network. You need a champion.
Right now?
Uh-oh, let's go.
Patrick, you didn't learn your lesson?
Oh, my God. Patrick's going to take another beating.
Go beat his ass.
That's right. Show him what's what. Show him girl power. There you go.
Kick him in the balls.
Ow! I always feel really bad when I see.
Isn't that girl power?
Let's go back to the whole.
This is awesome. I can't believe this.
Oh, wait. Oh, they're out standing in the rain.
They're standing.
Look, I didn't understand why Patrick wanted to wrestle with me, but I understand. There's no question why he wants to wrestle with her.
They're doing it.
They're dancing and kicking and feet in the air.
They're swinging a little kick around. It's very cute.
It's like
Patrick is down. And now he's all wet.
I'll tell you what, Patrick is willing to put it out right on the line for this program.
He is dedicated
to his art.
He does do it. Oh,
well,
my God.
Here's an outraged patron
of
Roberta's.
There's our other guest.
Somebody walked out.
An outraged patron.
There's Regina Schrambling, our other guest.
Well, she might not be coming on the show after seeing this.
Just seeing Patrick on the ground, kicked by
She's
a blonde.
She's probably going to leave as soon as she can.
Blonde in cowboy boots.
He's like, I didn't sign up. What's she going to talk
Did
about,
she,
Katie?
Well, she is really a funny and acerbic
individual. I don't think
individual.
She's talking about
Is she
wrestling.
In the studio? Is she in with the guys? Where'd she go?
Bring her in, because...
We're about to bring her in.
Okay, great.
She looks appalled.
What?
Do we get a break? Or
yeah. Well, I guess we're not going to. I think we're just going to go right
to
it.
We'll just go right
into
it.
Patrick's going out on a stretcher.
Wait. Yeah. Oh, Patrick.
Patrick's being brought back in on a stretcher.
Raphael, she kicked him up.
Good Lord. Good Lord.
You kicked his ass, Raphael.
It's like watching TV in here.
Come on in, Regina.
Put the smack
We're very
down
informal
Patrick.
Here. Did you get lost on the subway? It was very difficult to get out. What?
Yeah, but the subway wasn't running.
I can't even believe Patrick is still walking after that.
That's stupid.
I think I pulled something.
Hold on a second.
I think we still need a few more minutes to cover some of these issues. I mean, there's
these.
Wait, yeah, come in here.
Well, one time he said he had his rubber bands were well-oiled rubber bands from Indonesia, and that he could get them in one nostril and out the other. I thought that was...
Well, wrestling is nothing if not avant-garde.
Now, who was... one of his... people ended Bruce Sammartino's long reign. Who was Bruce?
Bruno Sammartino.
Who was
Bruce Sammartino.
Bruce Springsteen?
What? No, Bruno
Sammartino.
Sammartino.
Oh, God. Well, he was the standard bearer good guy for so long. And he was the champion, you know, he was the status quo. He was the man, you know, and I was a
Meaning
little bad on
what?
His guys, brought him down. He was the champion.
He had technique and he had charisma.
He was a good guy, very popular fan favorite, you know, Italian-American, had like huge legions of fans behind him. Would never consider doing anything like, you know, cheating.
Like Rocky Balboa?
Very much. Yeah, he's definitely very much.
But Rocky perceived in the wrestling?
But not an underdog. Well, don't forget Rocky... broke Hulk Hogan. That's why Hulk. That's you know that was Hulk Hogan's really big break.
What happened?
He was in Rocky.
Oh yeah,
II, right.
Oh yeah,
and then Thunder Lips, and that really.
And then he did a bunch of children's movies.
He had
right?
he had been a wrestler, but it was after that movie that he really went over. When Vince McMahon said, "Son, I'm going to make you a star." But Bruno Sammartino, I consider one of the great moments in wrestling when Stan Hansen broke his leg at Chase Stadium in front of 50,000 fans. That was a good day.
He really broke his leg.
Of course.
Really?
So how much injury do these guys actually sustain?
It's a real thing.
Yeah, it's a real thing.
They really break bones, and I mean, on purpose. Be like, here's $20,000. I'm going to break your leg.
Wait, but earlier I was telling you about a guy who could metabolize fireballs.
Yes.
Okay, that's all.
All right.
Okay,
all
no,
right.
Still want to know if wrestling is fake?
Once again, yes. Shall we review that territory?
Well, absolutely amazing. Well, we're actually happy to have our second guest, Regina, who is going to tie, sustainable agriculture to wrestling.
Wrestling is very sustainable
through
sport.
Through food blogging.
No,
she's got
seasons.
A big job out of her.
Wrestling is perpetual.
It has nothing to do with sustainable agriculture.
Oh, I don't know.
I think there's a lot of commonalities.
Well, it's sustainable. It's sustained. All this,
there you go.
Both require a lot of hard work and
it's
dedication.
Perpetual.
Everything requires hard work and dedication.
And if
especially professional wrestling.
greatest bunch of athletes I ever met.
Champions.
If a company like ours substitutes commodity meat for our heritage meat, we have to be kayfabe. Tight upper lip.
You're the carny.
I actually don't. I've never heard the term kayfabe, but I'm not the carny of. We didn't have freaks or anything.
What was it like? Yeah, they didn't have like strongest man competition.
By the time I was, my family was into it. It wasn't about the freaks and the weirdos and the. It was just a multi-gazillion dollar business.
Well, it's about the games on the.
Those are fixed.
Yeah, of course,
and
they
you compare.
And the thing is, and the people who play the games are called marks, right?
Yes.
And in wrestling, that's what we call the fans. I mean, that's to show you what great respect we have for the people who
but there's
pay
no
money
betting.
To watch
this. There's no betting on wrestling because it's.
Why would you bet on something where the outcome's already determined?
Because maybe there are some people who want to suspend that.
But the public doesn't know the outcome.
No, of course not. It's
very tightly.
State secret.
No one knew.
Of course.
So they could definitely bet. I mean, it'd be like. It's already been decided.
But it's not a game of chance, though.
Like, who could have known that Cyndi Lauper's purse actually contained, like, an anvil in it, which knocked out the Grand Moolah, right?
The Fabulous Moolah.
The Fabulous Moolah?
The Fabulous Moolah. She was the champion. She passed away recently. She was the women's champion for over 30 years. Hmm. Like, for 30 years she held that belt.
How was female wrestling? Was that an economic force, like, in its own circle, or, like, men's?
Moolah was great. We should dedicate a whole show to the Fabulous Moolah. Talk about girl power.
But was there a circuit of female wrestling?
No, they wrestle on the same cards as the men.
Okay.
She was the old school. I mean, she was not a TNA pretty girl. I mean, she was tough. She was the real deal.
She was the real deal, huh?
And she claims, I read her book, she claims to have slept with both Elvis Presley and Jerry Lee Lewis.
Wow. Gail Green.
She looks
really, if she slept with Bob Marley, it would be like the holy trifecta.
It's like she tag-teamed them. Well,
Gail Green?
Can we? Yeah.
It was Anna Wintour slept with Bob Marley, right? That's part of the Anna Wintour legend.
No, really?
Yeah,
I never heard.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
That's right. Gail Green slept with Elvis, right?
That was, yes, she
right.
did.
Told
him to order a banana and peanut butter sandwich on the way out.
That's awesome. I'm going to get one here at Roberta's. I'm going to give the banana
and
peanut butter pizza.
She even said that. Like, she even published that detail. Didn't you find that amazing? Yeah. That would not be something I would want to say, that on my way out of my tryst with the king of rock and roll, he says to me, oh, yeah, hey, babe, order me a peanut butter and banana sandwich.
The king of rock and roll is not from Brooklyn, Katie.
No, okay, right. Yeah, you're right. Lost my vernacular there, but I mean.
He's not from Brooklyn.
Well, it was just such a gruesome
this
detail.
Is the way, this is the way Captain Lou would have wanted his show.
Absolutely. A raucous good time.
Can we each say a word? I mean, let's start with the people who knew him best, the two people. You go first. A word on Captain Lou. For on behalf of Brazil and South America, anywhere below the equator.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. Nice.
Oh, well sweet. Done. Very
Katie,
sweet.
I throw it to you for a real heartfelt eulogy.
One word.
I now know that I've missed something great, and I'm going to go back and find out. I'm going to check in. Captain Lou has touched me from beyond the grave.
Okay, Shauna?
Crazy.
Regina? Nothing. Well, I am. You go last because you're going
to
give.
I have nothing to say on this.
But you're going to go
last.
You
said it all, baby.
You should say something, and then we'll cut to break after.
Well, what's your word?
And then we'll come back with Regina.
This is just a prediction that a little like Jesus, the parts of his rubber bands are going to be spread to various
reliquaries, my favorite art forms
around the world, and that many thousands of years, Captain Lou's name will. Exist. It'll exist on this network, and the internet's forever.
And our tag cloud will
I'll tell you what. But when Captain Lou Albano died, of all the texts and emails and Facebook postings, I never saw more of a flurry of activity. I mean, it was much more than when Michael Jackson died. You know, certainly around the crew I run with.
I think that's what it is because I didn't see anything.
the group of Nobel laureates that I run with. Yeah, Captain Lou deserved the Pulitzer, the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, he was the last end of an era. I think that, like I said, the great managers, the Fred Blassie, the Grand Wizard of Wrestling, and Lou Albano was the last of those guys. They stood for one thing, and that is cheating.
That's a good thing.
Always win. No, but this is what, you know, this is the charisma of wrestling. Sometimes it's not what happens in the ring that counts. It's what, you know, what happens.
That was very charismatic. I haven't seen in years anyone on TV just talking like that. It's absurd and brilliant. And
it was total carnival.
Rest in peace.
Hey, does anybody know who the poet laureate of the United States is? Because I have no clue.
Are you going to say Lou Albano?
No, who cares is the point.
Yeah.
Not when there are men like Lou Albano still walking the earth.
Well, we're going to take a break and we'll come back with Regina Schrambling.
You were working as a waitress in a cocktail bar when I met you. I picked you out, I shook you up and turned you around, turned you into someone new.
Okay, and we're back. This is Main Course Part Q on Heritage Radio Network. We're sponsored today by the Hearst Ranch. Our engineer is Nat Wiener, and our producer is Jack Inslee. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, with
Patrick Martins.
And Shauna Pacifico is sitting in with us today.
Great song.
Back
great
40. Song.
Odie in the house.
I hardly even know what to do now that we've had this hilarious, uproarious hour. We're all sort of, poor Regina spent 2 hours on the subway getting here, and we're all like played out from our hour of wrestling. But let me introduce our next guest. This is Regina Schrambling. Regina has a wonderful blog called gastropoda.com that is, it's really almost indescribable. It is a extended splenetic rant on a variety of topics. Each entry more entertaining and vicious than the last. I mean, I hardly know. And yet vicious. You should see her.
she looks very sweet.
She's so sweet.
Very sweet.
She's thinking, I
she's
hate
thinking,
you.
I'm going to kill you.
No.
No, I'm going to write about you. You know that people tremble. You realize that.
Well, are you hardcore?
I should not. She's a big deal. I shouldn't.
All right, let the guest talk for a second.
Well, wait. I haven't finished her introduction.
No, keep going.
Because Regina's too modest to say what else she does, but she also writes about food for the Los Angeles Times, right?
No more.
But for a long time, you were very prominent on the food pages at the New York Times, and we know your feelings on that subject. And you just kind of you're in the mix pretty much everywhere. Your name pops up all the time, so. Anyway, you are a longtime food writer, long before food was as trendy and sexy as it is now.
I know, no one was eating before Regina.
No, they weren't. They certainly were not.
Judith Jones was, come on.
She's been around forever.
Yeah, well, she's one of those of us who was cryogenically packaged, you know, about 40 years ago.
She was telling me firsthand about the ice age. It was pretty cool, too. Apparently, it's very colder than we think.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I told you about that.
We were joking about Katie being around before the plates had shifted.
Yeah, because
so
I'm the only person
easier.
Who was born after before 1960.
Everything
within
was
like
local.
A 5 mile radius.
Everything was local back then. They didn't have the same baggage.
The zebras and the monkeys.
So, how did you get into food? I mean, where are you born and raised, if I can ask?
I'm from Arizona.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But
you were born there. I thought most people migrated there because, I mean...
Yeah, no, there aren't very many near Arizona natives.
Right.
Except for... There's some, but no.
Native American. The
Native
Tohono
Americans.
O'odham are from Arizona.
Yeah, I forget the tribe that was in my town. We had a reservation in my town, but basically there aren't very many Arizona natives. My parents came from somewhere else. And
then you went to high school in Arizona?
Yeah. And I went through part of college in Tucson.
Okay.
Dropped out. And then I moved across the country. I didn't eat until I got to New York, but
piece by piece.
Yeah, I lived in Nebraska and Iowa, Louisville.
You didn't eat until you got to New York.
So no. Give us the headlines. What happened in Nebraska, Iowa, Nebraska first?
I started out cleaning toilets at Pershing Auditorium. I sold shoes. I was a bookkeeper at Miller and Payne.
Fascinating.
I didn't eat at all. And
Jack
then,
of all trades.
Same thing happened to me. I did the same kind of shit.
Now tell us about Iowa.
I found a job on a tiny little weekly there, and I spent a year and a half there. And when they wouldn't make me, they made me the editor, but they wouldn't pay me what the man before me was getting. So I left and I moved to Louisville.
In Louisville?
I worked, I did little odd jobs, and I finally got hired by the Louisville Times. And I got hired as a clerk, and I wound up annoying the copy desk so much they elevated me to copy editor.
So that was your big break in
that was my
in
big
Louisville.
Break yeah it was a great
and
place
what about do. Them was able to embrace or like what did you offer them and what were they open to hearing?
It's a newspaper that no longer exists, the Louisville Times, but it was a great newspaper. Everybody was like obsessed with perfection and getting it right and cleverness in writing and really it was all about getting it right, so that's probably why it doesn't exist anymore, but it was a great
too much
place.
Time too considered.
Yeah, and then everything was changing. It was an afternoon paper in a world where afternoon papers were no longer really needed.
Why couldn't they convert to morning?
Because there was already a Louisville Courier Journal.
Which still exists.
Some by the same company, but you know they had a morning paper and an afternoon paper, so one of them died. But
shepherd the staff onto the morning one?
I had left by then. I only stayed a couple of years there, and then I moved to Philadelphia.
And so. Did you work at the Inquirer?
First, I worked at the Bulletin in Philadelphia.
Uh-huh. That no longer exists.
No.
I've
killed papers
history.
Wherever
yeah,
I could.
Yeah, you're a great writer.
If only the LA Times is hanging on by a thread.
Yeah, I almost managed to wipe that out, too.
Oh, there goes Gourmet. So.
Yeah, did you write for Gourmet, obviously?
I did two little tiny pieces, so
well,
you
that's
can't
all
blame
you need.
Me. Tated him.
That's all you need.
If they hadn't rewritten them? The paper, that magazine might still exist.
Do you want to talk about that for?
Well, what did you? I mean,
I was an associate editor for Gourmet, and they fired me after 1 year. So I think
really?
That was a not. I wouldn't say a big part of their downfall, but no, just kidding. So, what do you think happened? Why did that happen?
I think bean counters came to work, and Condé Nast is. I really think it's kind of sad. Cy Newhouse wants to keep a stable of stallions and really gorgeous horses, and there's no carriages to pull anymore, and that's a real problem. If he'd expanded onto the web more or into branding or done something else, you know, I believe in magazines. I think they'll be around for a while, but you can't. The future's dot com.
Do you believe in magazines? There's kind of like a whole movement of saying that print is dead in a certain way, that everything's going to the internet, magazines. And do you think that's still going to be around?
Well, I was on the train for a long time today. And what was in my bag?
Yeah, right.
You know, you still need something. And, you know, there's always going to be bathrooms.
But there's a train in New York, and there's a train in Boston, and there's a train in Chicago. But when you go everywhere else, there's...
Well, there's still bathrooms.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's true. I mean, I don't see
I don't think print is dead. You have to read and you have to,
I don't understand why that big conglomerate would not have given it to three people to just run a downsized version of it just to keep it alive. Maybe they had too much staff. Like, you give that to six kids in college now and they would morph it into something rather than completely cancel it. Like, that never made sense to me why they would.
You know why it doesn't make sense?
With all the money they have.
It's not about the reader. It's not about the staff. It's about the advertiser. And no one wants to acknowledge that the reality of the world right now is advertising is unsustainable. It's the one thing that no one's talking about. It can't exist because in the future, advertising is the middleman. Well, we don't need a middleman.
I think, I don't know, why would they choose Gourmet? Didn't they have other town and, I don't know, some other magazine that even though it was doing a little better, like Gourmet, it just seems like it's also all print journalism wishes that they hadn't made that decision, you know, and made it look as if maybe they were on, or I don't know, maybe it's like an economic shakedown and they just had to get rid of one magazine.
And it was hurting the most for advertising. Advertising drives those magazines. I mean, even Ruth Reichel says in the Times today that, you know, they weren't getting the ads they needed. Travel, jewelry, the high-end stuff is not advertising right now.
Right.
And they were dependent on it, where Bon Appetit could live forever on Campbell's soup.
I mean, that really is it. It's, I mean, in all the magazines,
I still think
they
could garner
the friends in the magazine
industry to keep it going.
Canned. Well, maybe nobody cared enough. I mean, I think, you know, it's, I mean, I feel bad for the people who work there. I knew quite a few people at Gourmet, but on the other hand, I'm thinking to myself, you know, it had kind of a stuffy formula. I wasn't crazy about it. I thought the magazine had gotten better than it was 5 years ago.
I haven't bought it.
But there you go. You're a chef. You're a professional.
No,
you're not buying that food
magazine.
What magazines do you buy?
Food Arts, which I don't have to buy.
Michael Batterbury.
Yeah.
But, you know, I read local stuff, the New York Mag.
Even Michael Batterbury. I mean, they're hurting for ads just like everybody else. I mean,
but there's not really a really, there's not a really good food magazine out there. I mean,
even in food arts,
it's all advertisement. It's like pages and pages and pages of advertisement.
And advertorials blur the line.
And it's just kind of like,
it's
advertisement for bad food. In a certain way, like, it's just like, why would this even be?
I know it's interesting how you see like the advertising content, and then next to it, it'll be like a series of articles about sustainable blah blah blah.
Yeah,
which is the absolute antithesis of the advertising model.
I
mean, it's just
Food Arts.
Yeah,
and you don't have to.
I don't have to.
That's right.
So,
I don't know. Where do you think it's going, Regina? I mean, you're more plugged in because you've been doing the internet thing forever. I mean, you had a food blog long before most people, I think.
Even before the internet.
It was in her mind before then.
No, it was my exit strategy from the New York Times. I started in 2002, which is another eon in internet years.
It sure is.
But, you know, the whole problem with the internet is how do you make money?
Yeah.
Advertisement.
You can't get people to pay on the... it doesn't work.
But isn't there that whole movement of people being like, you can make millions, and you have to, for Google or whatever, if you get so many people to log on?
Good luck.
Make some money. I mean, there are food blogs like, what's that French girl, zucchini and something
chocolate.
Or other, chocolate.
An amateur gourmet, I think, does well. The food section does quite well.
Yeah. I mean, they do all right. But for everybody else, it's like a penny.
If you're lucky,
if you can nail down
a penny per hit.
Yeah.
It's more complicated than that. It's a click through and how long do they stay on the ad?
Yeah, they can't just see the ad. They have to go on that site. They have to click onto that
for
logo
the record
and go to the site.
Heritage has gone against that. We voted against having that on our site.
Is that right? Good for you.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we can generate more individual sponsor dollars, you know, but we need to keep people on it. But I mean, is there any way to control the types of advertisements they do on your site? Do they give you categories that you can choose from?
Well, you don't have advertising
on
your site.
I have none on Gastropita, but I did start a little blog for a while, Gastreaks, and I really thought I could do it and make money with ads, but you really can't. If Google wants to own the world, it's really difficult. They don't want to, you know, it's not really going to work. But I read a really great thing this morning. A friend sent me a link to something that said the future is going to be selling things, actual things, selling virtual things, and selling information. It's not going to be about advertising. So if you have a product, you can sell it and make money on a website. And if you have a virtual thing, which is like on Facebook when you can send somebody a gift for a dollar, there's no tangible anything.
I heard that too, like doing like virtual art for people.
For like Second Life kind of things.
Yeah, and then taking their photographs and or drawing portraits of them just online, and you can sell that for whatever.
Wow.
And then the other thing is selling information.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you mean selling information?
Like Travelocity does.
Oh, okay.
you know, basically people come there and I don't know how it works
they
with the hotels.
They do something and they take a cut.
Yeah. They just do the work.
Well, and also
to
they've
find
bought a they've bought a block of tickets or they have bought a block of time from a hotel that's, you know, needing to sell a particular block.
So how do you make money on is there any other
only
than
through
that?
Those means? In other words, the advertising thing is just that whole paradigm is not working.
Because I remember reading a blog recently about a single mother in New York, and she had written, "Oh, I finally have enough blah 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 to support me and my child," and I was just wondering what that was, but
subsistence living.
Well, that or just inflated stories.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, I mean, tell us about the New York Times. Like, how is the web different than their, you know, print guide? Because I see you used to work with one of their web pages, correct?
Oh, with the Times? No.
Yeah.
I left in 2002, and so they were just, you know, that was nothing like what it is today.
So yeah, tell me, really, what was it like navigating that world? I mean, they are maybe the most important food section in the United States. I mean, what's the type of energy? What were the stories they were looking for? How are they trying to...
And what do you think of the new regime?
Yeah.
Well, I find it kind of sad. And you know, maybe it's because I was there. You always think when you were there was the best time. But I really think I was there from 98 to 2002. And the section had this vision that was, you know, it was all about covering food in a different way from what it's doing now. It's like you pick it up one day, it's about pasta, and one day it's about, you know, tater tots, and it's something else. And it just seems like it's scattershot. It's just a bunch of trend stories thrown together. And the other section when I worked there was probably too regimented because we had, you know, the minimalist and the chef column, and everything was columns and a few little features. And it was kind of rigid. But at the same time, I thought it covered New York food at the very high end. Today, I don't really quite understand what it's all about.
Who were your colleagues back then? I mean, was it like Marion Burroughs and people like that?
She was still there. Michaeline Buzico was the food editor, and she was quite brilliant, and she was in charge. And Sam Sifton replaced her. And then after he came on board, I left not long after that.
Uh-huh. And now he's the restaurant critic.
He is the restaurant critic.
Yeah.
But everybody knows what he looks like.
Yes, but we don't know what he'll be writing like from week to week. One week it'll be Hemingway, and then it'll be MFK Fisher, and you're going to get an interesting cross section of styles.
Very, very.
But
interesting.
No, he's just not. Everybody knows what he looks like. It's just crazy.
Well, those
like
days are over now. Because
I think that the internet has democratized. I mean, food critics even can't hide.
So
their coat check area, like delivering some meat, and they had a little picture of him, and the coat check lady was the first bastion of defense.
Yeah, right.
To make sure, although every meal at Danielle is good, but I would still want to know if I was him.
Oh no, they know. They know in seconds whether he's there. They know before he's coming.
Yeah, Shauna,
do you know? What Bruni looked like? Has he been to Back 40?
I don't think he would come to Back 40. I think that our goal in the beginning was not to be rated by stars. We got a review by Peter Meehan. We weren't trying to be a one or two star restaurant. We were just trying to be a local neighborhood.
Aspiring for zero stars.
aspiring for not to be rated, because I think in my mind, well, I kind of agree with Peter. I don't really care.
It is.
I know I make good food. I know we do good food. I know we do a good thing there. So it's
and its insides are remarkably like Roberta, the quality of the wood and stuff like that. The kind of rustic
and we're really
feel.
Busy. We don't need a review.
Yeah. Right. Well, Loop has never been reviewed.
Really?
Oh, really?
Can you believe that?
No, I don't believe that.
Let's talk about reviews.
It's true.
Gina, you go to restaurants all the time. So what do you look for in a restaurant? Like, who do you like
and
right
now?
And
in food in general.
And what do you look for in food?
I want something better than I can make at home. I mean, I went to restaurant school. I've worked in a restaurant.
Right.
I catered. I've developed hundreds of recipes. You know, and I'm not a great cook, but I want something better than I could make at home.
So do you not go to like steakhouses or fish places because you could do that better just by getting access?
It depends. I find that I'm gravitating more to places that do one thing really, really well. Like I love Pearl Oyster Bar. You shouldn't, but you know, that's food you can almost make at home. But it's, you know, it's just consistent. And there's a lot of restaurants that just, what I really want is consistency. And that's the hardest thing in New York to get.
And how much is the ambiance of the place a factor of whether you'll go back?
I really think that the biggest change in restaurants and the healthiest change, it's like you don't care what it looks like anymore. You want it to be like, you don't want to be miserable while you're sitting there, but the most important thing is like what's on the plate and how they treat you. And then everything else just falls by the wayside. And I think value is really, people are really crazy about value right now, which is important too. But mostly all that frippery that we put up with when you went out for a restaurant, it's not important anymore.
So let me start a little quick fire. Maybe we could do this. Like some restaurants I really am big fans of. I mean, I'll just throw certainly Roberta's. I think it's one of the top five
absolutely.
For the food, especially. Back 40. I love Balthazar. I think that has always maintained itself as a very kind of.
I got treated badly at Balthazar. Really? I'll never go back.
All right. Well, I already I put my neck out there. So now, Katie, you go.
I like on the Upper West Side. I like Il Nostro Mexicano. You know that one on Amsterdam in 90th? 100th?
Oh. Noche Mexicana?
Noche Mexicano. Yeah. I love that restaurant.
Do you?
Yeah. I think it's really good. Yeah. I think the food is excellent. I don't like to go in there.
Gross.
I like their takeout. And by the way, the service is a lot
faster.
Are you
from the Upper West Side too?
Yeah. We live quite nearby.
So give us some restaurants that you like.
On the Upper West Side or anywhere?
Or no, anywhere, man.
Well, if I were going to eat Mexican, I'd go across the park to El Paso Taqueria on 97th and between Park and Madison. It's really good.
Oh, yeah. That is really good.
And it's a nice little room, too, unlike Noche
Mexicano. Yeah, Noche Mexicano.
Nice walk across the park.
Yeah, exactly. And then, it's a nice walk. I really like the New French in the West Village. It's perfect. I mean, I've almost never had a bad or inconsistent experience. And they know what they're doing, and they do it, like, every time exactly right. Mm-hmm. And in our neighborhood, I like Keffi. And the Mermaid Inn is quite
there.
Good up in our neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a lot of good restaurants on the Upper West Side now.
It's gotten a lot better.
It's really
well, it
amazing.
It was a kind of
just
dark
in the last
side.
Years.
For, I mean, the Fatty Crab Empire just expanded to 76
yeah, that's
and Broadway.
Right.
And it's better than it is downtown by far.
Well, Corwin
and we got
came,
a Whole Foods.
Yes.
Amazing. That reminds me
and
right
I've
near
converted.
You.
I can't believe it.
I know, right?
I hate it, and I'm converted.
Yeah. You know?
That's
and then you have an amazing
more than things.
What to convert it to Whole Foods?
Well, it's just you just like big conglomerate. I don't want to do that. And then you go in and you're like, but it's so much better than
the food is really good.
It's
and
it's
not
other
expensive
stuff.
Or not excruciatingly.
Well, it's doable.
Yeah, it's manageable.
It's manageable. Yeah. I mean,
you'll pay 15% more, but you'll get 15% more. Kicks out of your
foot.
I always worry it when I stand in line that I'm not going to react to the cash register.
I know what you mean.
Right away.
That's what they have those dispatchers for. Honey.
That's what.
For people like you who are asleep at the wheel.
To overcompensate, I end up racing over. You know, the other person hasn't left
my
yet.
Stuff out. Yeah, I know, it's crazy.
I like the restaurant Yerba Buena. Have you been there?
Oh, yeah, that's good. On the 2nd Avenue?
Yeah. I haven't
been there. On Avenue A.
Avenue A. That's quite good. And his other place in the theater district is good. Toloache.
Oh, I haven't been there.
That's
but then they just opened another Yerba Buena on Perry
been
Street.
That one.
Or
yeah.
I love Mama Fuco's Sandbar. I find it always some epiphany happens there, with one of the dishes if you order a bunch. And actually, one very underestimated chef, he used to own Remy Restaurant. His name was Francesco Antonucci. I mean, he kept a block-long restaurant going after September 11th. I mean, 10, 15 years at that space. And now he has a really good Italian restaurant.
Wow.
It's a very honest rendition of each of the dishes. He doesn't pretend or try to be anything. It's not. It's Antonucci's on 81st between Lex and 3rd.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's there, and it's packed always.
In Pudo.
And Madonna moved into a massive
in Pudo?
Building
yeah.
next door.
They have good and really it's my favorite noodle.
I never go anywhere, you guys.
No, those are the two restaurants I've been to
in the
past 5 months.
This lame Mexican restaurant on the Upper West Side. Oh, yeah, I can't even go there.
I never go anywhere.
I went
I come
to
Roberto's.
Peking Duck House.
I cook.
Yeah,
at home. I mean, I got to get
well, it's expensive, and I sometimes
it's really expensive.
Don't.
Yeah.
I don't like going to restaurants whenever I'm going to have a mediocre meal. Only not
yes.
because the restaurant's not good. It's just sometimes it just depends on what's going on that day, also in restaurants, I believe. And if I'm going to pay $100, I want to have a really, or $200,
yeah, it
I want to have a
really,
really
good
meal.
I'd rather go to the same place over and over and over again just to know.
Yeah.
Really unusual that I'd try some place I'd never heard of. Or I mean, it's just not worth
Rafaela,
it.
Rafaela, what do you like?
Oh, my favorite is Bar Pitti.
Oh, Bar Pitti? Right next to Da Silvano?
It's not as pretentious as Da Silvano, and the food is always good. Always the same. I'd never look at the menu, though. I always go with the special chalkboard, and it's best spinach you can get.
It's one of the few places where it's nice to eat outside. I never like eating outside
in
the city.
There's a bunch of paparazzi outside of that place hanging around all the time.
What can I ask? Is there a good churrascaria?
No.
Or the Brazilian restaurant I like very much is called Casa. It's on Bedford Street. With that beautiful white windows. Have you ever been there?
No, I've been to Miss Favela in Williamsburg.
Oh, that's
it's really
that's
good. The
feijoada
is delicious. Really good fish.
She's we try to maintain favela quality with all of our food.
Did you guys read that article about the favela good. In The New Yorker this past week?
No.
Oh, that was, you should read that. That was very good.
My family's from Brazil, so my dad used to have people who would help him with the house and stuff, and I would get to go back with them into, I don't know if they were official favelas, but they were certainly poor communities, and the food there was amazing.
Really?
I mean, how many pots were going in the streets
it's
and
low
stuff.
Low country cooking, but it's really good.
You know, there's a churrascaria in our neighborhood, La Rural. And I'm taking Spanish right now, and my Spanish is from Mendoza, and he said it was great, like really outstanding.
Have you eaten there?
No, but I'm ready to go. I mean, we're going to actually do.
It's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Don't go to the nice salad restaurant. Bar. Skip the salad bar. And
I almost
yeah, they entice
the
you. That's the thing with them. They entice you. They make these really big salad bars, and they fill you up on all this stuff. So then when it comes time to eat the meat, that you just don't. You're not like, and the rest of the meal. It's just it's a lot of food.
Get their portion costs good.
I don't know. Like every time I go to this, I haven't been in years. But you go in, and they have like now they do sushi and they do all. Yeah. You're like, oh, I'll have a little bit of this, a little bit of
I
that.
Never eat in a restaurant with a mixed ethnic footprint.
Well, then if you go to if you go to the
that's crazy.
If you go to the churrascarias, they dial the salad bar is all mixed stuff,
huh?
Because they just put so much stuff out there.
Although do say American.
Any place
cuisine.
That does like Mexican, Middle Eastern, and Thai on the same menu.
Sounds delicious.
I think we know. We're
but
not going there.
But there's a Chinese Puerto Rican connection,
right? Oh,
now
that's right? A great.
Or Cuban.
Cuban.
Chino Latina.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there
all throughout
are still
Chelsea,
a few
there's a bunch of restaurants.
In the Upper West Side,
too. Yeah. Where's that connection coming from?
The rice.
No, it has something to do with immigration. And
there were a lot of Chinese who immigrated to Cuba. And then
Cuba,
came,
right?
Sorry?
Through Cuba.
Or through Cuba. Yeah, but I mean, I think they must have stayed there for a while because they seem to have incorporated.
It's an immigration thing.
And then they came up here to New York with the sort of general, probably the general Cuban exodus.
So could you tell us some of the things that you've written recently or things that you're about to write just for people and also give us
the information?
Yeah,
what are you working on? I haven't seen you in a long time. What you doing?
What am I working on? Eking out a living like everybody in this horrible environment. I'm doing a lot of little shopping seasonally columns for a magazine called Shop Smart. I'm doing stuff for Edible Manhattan.
Yeah.
Nice.
There's a really nice little Mexican market that opened at 100th Street. It's got great stuff. So I did a little piece about that.
Oh, lovely.
I'm going to be doing a piece there's a new cheese magazine called Culture. Oh. I'm doing a piece for them this month.
Mm-hmm. You know, Ann Saxelby has a show on the network.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
I thought the show should have been, she calls it Cutting the Curd. I thought it should have been called Curds. Way.
Goofy dude, man. Oh.
So you're doing the little magazine bits, and that's good.
Yeah, and I blog on Epicurious on Frugality, which is sort of an interesting little gig.
Mm. Oh, have you come to my recession cooking classes? No, you haven't.
No, but I read about them in Edible Manhattan.
I know. Yeah. You look good in that photo. That was a fun picture.
I know. It's like red lips and big tits. Isn't that what they want?
This is your life in bars, though, isn't it? Roberta's.
Yeah, well, you place. Know. I'm reverting to my roots. It's true. I spent about a year and a half.
I think that should be the name of your memoir, Red Lips and Red Tits.
Or Back to the Bar. Well, this has been really exciting. I find it fascinating. I mean, we were almost so hyped up off the wrestling that we just like shot through this.
You were hyped up because you got your ass kicked.
No,
that's right. Not once, but twice.
And I got myself into what was that movie?
I don't know.
It was a corkscrew neck
the
breaker.
The figure four leg lock.
Oh, yeah. Figure four leg lock.
Looked like you were four.
It wasn't the corkscrew neck breaker.
No, it wasn't.
The poetry of this wrestling stuff. I'm sorry. You'll have to listen to this later. I mean, I was not in the least bit interested in Captain Lou.
No, because, I mean, you know, people
but
wouldn't
the fact
have flocked
is it was
for
fascinating.
It if it wasn't.
Yeah, clearly.
It was like
look,
an extension of vaudeville.
I don't want to watch baseball either, Anyway,
no, well, baseball's pretty interesting.
It was a revelation.
I saw that movie, The Wrestler, and that was enough for me.
Was it?
Pretty good movie.
Oh, it was painful.
Really? Why? Because of the glass scene?
He was an irredeemable character.
Well, just because he turned on his daughter that final time. But up until then.
He was a worthless human being.
Yeah.
Ooh.
No, I agree.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Well, on that happy note,
I guess
we have to close this down. But Regina, I hope you'll come back again so that we can really.
No, we didn't even touch upon it. But this is a fun place,
your
and hopefully you'll get to eat the food.
Yeah, we'll go eat a pizza.
It's it's been the main course, Park Q,
right?
Sponsored by Hearst Ranch. I'm Patrick Martins.
Shauna Pacifico.
Katie Kiefer, and our producer today was Jack Inslee, and our engineer, thank you, Nat Wiener.
And we did Regina Schrambling. Real honor to have you, someone of your stature.
And thanks to Mike Edison for an absolutely uproarious hour of wrestling trivia. That was, not even trivia, wrestling history.
And to all carny culture out there.
Yeah.
Carnies!
Until next time.
We drink, it's